10 minutes after 8, Glenn Sachs emailed me yesterday, and I've had him on the program before. It's been a while. But he is an interesting man. He's been an educator, has traveled extensively in Russia and the former Soviet bloc. And he has columns that are published all over the country, and he has a new one which is out there that I think is interesting and really worthy of taking a look at. And it has to do with a bit of foreign policy. And I am absolutely no expert on foreign policy. I don't claim to be. But yet, when there seems to be a building push for war, there is probably nothing more important to be talking about, because that is the big leveler for sure. Glenn, welcome back to the program. Good morning, sir.
My pleasure to be here.
Hey, tell us a little bit about your travels in Europe and in Asia a little bit, because you have apparently gone out there and gotten a very good perspective on what's actually happening on the ground in various countries.
Well, you know, I actually had the rare opportunity, or relatively rare opportunity, of traveling in the Soviet bloc in the bad old days. You know, Gorbachev came in 84, 85 and began reforming things. I was there in the Soviet Union and in the Eastern Bloc the year before that. So kind of like the last of the old guard when I was there. But, you know, one thing that really made an impression on me, and I still think this is relevant, is, you know, just how afraid the Soviet people were of war. You know, they suffered horrendously in World War II. I mean, most Americans are unaware of it, but they lost 27 million people in World War II, and it was the Soviet Union that inflicted 85% of Nazi Germany's casualties. Most of the war against fascism was between the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany. But, you know, at that time, the arms race was running at fever pitch. Reagan was in office. He just launched a tremendously expensive drive to get the United States, regain the United States nuclear superiority over the Soviet Union. And, the Soviet people were very worried about war. And in some ways it was, sad. I'd be in a bar or some other public place, and I'd talk to people, and, they would sometimes grab me and say, look, tell your president, we don't want war. Soviet people don't want war. You know, we know what war's like. Tell them we want peace. And yeah, here I was. I was 19 years old. It was so wildly out of proportion, but it showed you the fears that they had. And everybody I talked to there, you know, you never met a person who had not had a close relative die in World War II. You know, a father, an uncle, a brother, a grandfather. You know, it was horrifying. And, you know, I think now, obviously, this is 35 years later, a lot of that generation obviously is gone. Now it's more something in the history books. But even so, Russians are very worried about war. You know, they're worried about war. They're worried about the cost of war. And, you know, they'll remind you that Americans have never experienced war the way it really is. War is something we send people overseas to fight. We've never had it on our own territory, and you know, the enormous destruction and suffering and civilian casualties is something that we've never experienced. And you know, I think what's happening now, as you know, over the past couple decades, as NATO has encroached closer and closer to Russia, as the countries that were part of the Soviet bloc, that were even part of the Soviet Union, have been recruited into NATO. Where, you know, Russia has been, you know, surrounded by American and NATO bases going from the Baltic Sea down to the Black Sea, across Afghanistan, Iraq, Soviet Central Asia. I think the Russian people find that very worrying. And, Vladimir Putin, you know, SOB that he is, I think that he speaks for a lot of Russian people when he, you know, pushes back against this and is very upset over this, particularly because, you know, as I detail in my Chicago Tribune article this week, the United States, West Germany, England, France, they made it abundantly clear to the Soviet Union in 89, 90, 91 that NATO would not expand one inch eastward, that NATO would not expand into the Eastern Bloc. Certainly nobody dreamed that NATO would end up recruiting countries that were once part of the Soviet Union.
Yeah, so it does appear to be going against that agreement here. Glenn, what and the reason I wanted you to come on and talk about this is that we are witnessing the unmistakable odor and the sound of the growing drumbeat of getting some kind of international conflict going on. And I certainly detect this out of the current administration. The past administration, the Trump administration, for its flaws, did appear to be trying to get to some point where there could be a rapprochement with Vladimir Putin and Russia, and finding some way to have some good coexistence. And then you ended up getting the Russia conspiracy, which ended up going out there and essentially cutting the knees out from underneath any attempt at rapprochement or any kind of reasonableness with another major nuclear power, which is Russia. And do you think that that was intentional, to intentionally drive it closer to a larger conflict at some point? How do you see this?
Well, it's kind of interesting. You know, George Kennan, who was the diplomat who in some ways launched the Cold War in with his famous letter from Moscow in 1946 outlining the United States containment policy, he said something incredibly prescient in 1985. And remember, 1985, the Soviet Union was still the number two power in the world. They were still strong. They certainly had their problems. I saw those up close. They also, you know, had ways in which their system worked that we don't talk about, but they certainly had their problems. But George Kennan said, if tomorrow the Soviet Union were to magically disappear and fall into the sea, you know, within a few years, the United States will just have manufactured another enemy. And the, you know, the war machine, the war profiteering, the aerospace industry, the military industrial complex, the generals, et cetera, would have a new, you know, would find some new excuse to spend a tremendous amount of money on the military and continue with the expanding bases, et cetera.
And then enter stage left, Middle Eastern conflict and war on terror, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Soviet Union, you know, disappeared in a manner that nobody could have anticipated. Enter the war on terror. But, you know, we spend as much money, you know, adjusted for inflation, we spend as much money now as we ever did. We spend as much money now as we were doing during the Cold War. And, Bill, you know, you grew up in that time. You remember where it was always, yes, the armaments, the nuclear weapons, all the spending. We don't want to do this. We hate to do this, but we have to defend ourselves against the Soviet Union. Then the Soviet Union breaks up and disappears, and nothing changes. You know, the military spending went down for a few years, and then, boom, went right back up, and the whole machine is going just like it always did. And you're right, the war on terror was kind of the new thing. And you notice the war on terror now has faded, so we're finding new enemies, Russia, China,
yeah, et cetera. And what's most interesting is that it seems pretty clear to me, and by the way, I'm not some fan of Putin, because even as you write in your op-ed piece that Vladimir Putin would make a really good James Bond villain, right? You know, former kid. You could almost see Putin sitting there stroking a white cat on his lap, right? And it would be, you know, perfectly appropriate. But at the same time that we seem to be, all of a sudden we have Russian hackers, Russian interference in the election, and now we have, you know, Chinese interference, and then, of course, the biggest one, which is always brought up, is Iran. And correct me if I'm wrong, does it appear that they're trying to, that the system, those that actually wish to foment more war with the United States, you know, a splendid little war, you know, once again, are trying to, in your opinion, maybe get Russia, China, and perhaps even Iran to, you know, maybe, you know, get them together. I don't know.
Well, I think we've antagonized each of those countries, and I'm not going to, you know, vouch for the government of any of those countries, particularly Iran.
Yeah.
But I think we've, in our own way, we've unnecessarily antagonized each of them, and we're kind of pushing them into an uneasy alliance, and then we get all bent out of shape. Russia and China are collaborating. China signs new oil deal with Iran. You know, we're shocked, we're angry that the countries we're pushing away and we're antagonizing are uniting together. And, you know, I think what you said earlier was true. You know, one of the very, very few things where I thought Trump was correct was he said, you know, there's no reason we can't have a decent relationship with Russia. Russia is a capitalist country. There's no more communism. There's no more, you know, and all of our pretexts during the Cold War for hating on them, they're all gone. There's no reason we can't have a decent relationship with them. And the Democrats just demagogued Trump on it endlessly over, you know, Russia hacked the election, Russia this. Moscow Mitch, Trump's a traitor, all of that. And, you know, I'm a little disappointed in my Republican friends, because now we have a new administration, and Republicans, rather than recognizing, you know, what nonsense all this was and what was done to it, to President Trump over it, now they're just doing the same thing to Biden. You know, Biden's weak. Biden needs to stand up to Putin. Putin's eating Biden's lunch,
right,
et cetera. So you get the Republican hawks. The Democrats have been hawks on Russia for several years now. So on both sides of the aisle, you have this idiotic, unnecessary drive towards conflict, drive towards potential war.
Glenn, what do you believe drives this? Because I just don't see it as being regular politics. Or am I wrong? Maybe it is regular politics. Because you're right, because for the last 4 years prior to Biden, everything was about this is a fraud. They're using this. They're creating this fraud. Now the GOP is even in on the fraud now, it would appear.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite one is the Havana syndrome, you know, these alleged sonic attacks on American diplomats. Mm-hmm. First, it was blamed on Cuba. Trump blamed it on Cuba as if it's a fact. Now that's completely forgotten, and now it's being blamed on Russia. Now it's Russia's fault, Russia's behind it, et cetera. You know, I don't know who's behind it. You don't know. I doubt the American government knows. But it's just so interesting the way, you know, anything that comes up, they'll immediately just throw it on Russia. And it's almost like we have this in America, we have this doctrine that as long as the leader of a foreign country is a bad guy, or as long as you can pin this atrocity or that atrocity on the leader of a foreign country, then it's fine to antagonize them. It's fine to be aggressive towards them. It's fine to drive towards a war with them. I mean, Saddam Hussein was a bad guy, and we ended up invading a country that had done nothing to us, that was no threat to us, based on these trumped-up pretexts. And you would think that people would learn from this, but no, here we are with Russia, same thing.
Do you think, Glenn, by the way, I'm speaking with Glenn Sachs, who has an excellent article about what's going on in the United States and Russia and this push to demonize right now. I'm not saying that Putin's a good guy, all right? Putin is definitely one of those guys, Glenn. I think we would agree that no doubt has had brake lines cut and drugs given, you know, to certain people, all right? I mean, we just know it. It's kind of the way business is. Well, that being said, the United States at this point in time is arguably it's more divided. We're more at each other's throats. We have the pandemic issues. We have a debt which has just exploded out of control. Nobody seems to want to do anything about it. And one of my suspicions has been when you get a country that is, in essence, that unstable, they usually look overseas for a nice little splendid war to distract the sheep and get everybody all lined up behind the government again. Am I wrong about that, or is that just my conspiracy thinking today?
Well, you know, there's plenty of examples of that happening. You know, the rally around the flag, the rally around the flag effect. And you know, I mean, I don't want to get too deep into history, but, you know, when Iraq invaded Iran in 1980, you know, the Khomeini regime, the Islamic fundamentalists, you know, there were all sorts of divisions within Iran. The communists were strong. There were all sorts of problems. And then as soon as Iraq invaded, all of a sudden, everybody was united in the jihad against Iraq. And everybody forgot about their opposition to Khomeini or the, you know, wild reactionary things the Muslim fundamentalists have done. So there's definitely that rally around the flag effect. And, you know, maybe that is what's happening. Maybe that's part of it. We're divided. We're looking for some foreign adversary to unite against. I don't know, but I would remind people that, you know, this particular foreign adversary has nuclear weapons, and they have nuclear weapons aimed at us, and there's only so much you can push Russia around.
And if you end up pushing Russia into the arms of China, and, you know, I was kind of hoping, because I do see China certainly as a rival to any kind of U.S. hegemony. And it's obvious that they are an amazingly successful rising economic power. And we have helped enable this. But, you know, you got to think about it. You get Russia and China teaming up with one another. That'd be a pretty big rival to take on, wouldn't you think? Because, I mean, China may not have the nukes, but Russia does. And China's got a lot of military technology. Fair enough.
Yeah, well, I mean, China, of course, has nukes also, but not at the level that Russia or America does.
No.
you know, you're right. I mean, one of the big coups of the Cold War was when Nixon, the Republican administration Nixon, you know, pried China away from the Soviet bloc and made them neutral. And in fact, you know, China really was on our side, was on the U.S. side through a lot of the 80s. There was one American general who joked that China was our most reliable NATO ally somewhere around 1985 or 1987. But it's kind of interesting, you know, it was such a coup to pry them away from the Soviet bloc. And here we are needlessly antagonizing both countries. And, you know, China is a police state, you know, governed by a parasitic bureaucracy that holds all power. I'm not praising their regime in any way, shape or form. Just like you said, you know, Vladimir Putin, you know, you oppose Putin. You have a bad habit of turning up dead under mysterious circumstances. So I'm not defending either government. But, yeah, I think we are pushing them towards each other and, you know, without even any kind of historical view that this was the big coup in the Cold War, prying China away from Russia, from the Soviet Union. And now we're pushing them back together.
And is there or are there any adults in the system at this point in time that are willing to see that maybe this is not necessarily the wisest path to be taking when the United States is arguably in a relatively shaky financial situation?
Well, the problem, Bill, is that you're a liberal trader, and I'm a liberal trader, and we're enabling, both of us are, and we're enabling this dictator. We're like Neville Chamberlain, you know, we're appeasing this dictator, and you and I just want to sign a Munich agreement, giving the whole store away. I mean, this is part of the beating the drums for war. Anybody who steps back and says, hey, you know, is this really necessary? Why do we need to do this? They're not attacking us. They're not a threat to us. Why are we doing this? And then you're naive. You're an appeaser. You're somebody who doesn't recognize the threat. You're in denial. You won't defend this country, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that's the way anybody who tries to talk us down from these things is stigmatized. And, you know, again, I think it's very destructive. I think it's dangerous.
Glenn, how interesting you brought up the appeaser and all the rest of it. It reminds me of when Pat Buchanan, you know, arch conservative back in the day, and Ron Paul and a bunch of other people who were questioning the Iraq war actions at that point were pilloried on the front cover of National Review, unpatriotic conservatives, right? Remember that?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Patrick Buchanan's not conservative enough for you? Wow.
Interesting. That's why I wanted to bring you on here. Like I said, you've had an interesting experience with the former Soviet Union and, you know, kind of some boots on the ground there. Do you mind if I print your op-ed today on the blog post for this, or do you want me just to direct people to your glennsax.com? How would you like to handle this? I think it's interesting thinking that you got going on.
No, you can put it on your website. That's perfectly fine. And I'd be happy for people to read it and express their opinions, their disagreements, et cetera. You know, it traces some of the history. It traces some of the ways that, you know, our media has really, and our politicians have really mischaracterized a lot of what Russia has done and made it seem far more threatening and far more unreasonable than it really is.
All right. Very good. It's the op-ed, by the way, is Putin's Viewpoint, Maybe More Victim than Villain, by Glenn Sachs. Glenn, great talk with you, and thanks for taking a few minutes to discuss it this morning. Great having you on the show. You be well. Okay?
Always my pleasure, Bill.
All right.
Always my pleasure. Thank you.
Glenn Sachs, it's 828 at KMED and KCMD.